I'll just want to give you a quick update on our Midwest tour because it's closing in fast. We are currently sold out in Des Moines, Detroit, and Cleveland, but tickets are still available in Indianapolis, St. Louis, St. Paul, Milwaukee, and Chicago. If y'all haven't joined us for an in-person version of the show, it is so much fun and truly a night filled with magic. Tickets are available at supercarlinbrothers.com/events and can be found in all of the obvious places. We can't wait to see you in September. What's poppin', everybody? Hello and welcome to Popcorn Culture. My name is Ben Carlin and I am your host. Here with me today is a very special guest, my own wife, Alice.
Hi.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks. I'm a little nervous.
I swear, I feel like we were coming in here and I was like trying to get the set all like prepared for you. And I feel like I'm like giving you a tour of the office as if you've never been here before.
Yeah.
And,
like, I felt like a guest.
Yeah.
Like I've been here 10 times, but I'm just like, oh, thank you so much. Yes, I'll take some coffee. Yes, please. You know, like, I'm like, this is my husband.
Right. Yes. But so I think in some ways, I felt even more nervous about you being in here to do this. Like, I feel like you're seeing like the
work Ben. Yeah. Not home Ben.
The podcast Ben.
Work Ben is very peppy.
Oh no, now everybody's gonna be like, wow, okay, so I see what Ben's really bringing it whenever we're on the show and we're seeing like a completely different side of him than the real Ben.
Well,
over under on whether or not you think tears will happen in today's episode while we're recording.
Why would there be tears? Why would this be a thing?
She asked me before we came in whether or not it would be okay to see the topics that I kind of had like roughly slated the pop topics for today. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I don't think it's like, you know, it's better to not know because then you're gonna like, you're gonna mentally rehearse. You're gonna try to like
come. Are you up... gonna make me cry?
Well, I doubt it.
Oh,
I
mean, my goodness. What did I sign up for?
It's going to be fun.
It's going to be fun.
I am excited to have this kind of conversation with you. And to give some backstory, the reason that Alice has generously offered some of her time to us this morning is because Jay is off at Pokemon Worlds, which is extremely exciting.
So fun.
I know. I think that it has been the funniest thing in the world watching him get ready for like this trip in a way that I feel like he doesn't always get ready for all of the other trips.
Yeah.
Because like he's like,
well, it's for him.
It is.
Like, it's his passion. It's like, I mean, what he's excited about.
Right.
This is very cool for him.
Yeah. So he's got like all of his decks and everything all stacked up. Big Steve went out there with him. So he's out in Anaheim right now doing Pokemon World. So anyway, so that is the reason that Alice came in to join us. So the first thing that I thought would be kind of like interesting to discuss is whether or not you and I talk too much.
Oh, I think 95% of people would say, yes, we do.
Yeah.
We talk way too much. I think Addison thinks we talk too much. She's like, Mommy, Daddy, be quiet.
Yeah, she's trying to watch her stories.
I know.
Yeah. So this, I think about this sometimes because like it's not uncommon for us to like walk, like if we were to go through like our morning routine, we wake up,
we go downstairs, take care of the dogs, make coffee, and then we sit down on the porch and talk for like 30 minutes.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Before Addie gets up.
And then everything kind of turns into, I think it's funny the way that we go about it in the morning because we reserve this 30 minutes to spend with each other and to just literally sit doing nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And then
it's a ritual.
But then Addie wakes up and it's a full blown, we go from like calm, cool, collected to a full-blown sprint to the finish line.
Yes.
Which is getting her to preschool.
It like you're like the races are on.
Yes.
As soon as she comes barreling down the step, you can hear her little footsteps and we're like, here we go.
Right. And every day you never really quite know what you're gonna get. Like, mm-mm. It's like, is she gonna be upset with us because we were on the porch and we didn't hear her like calling for us?
Right.
Or is it gonna be like she comes around the corner and she found something yucky on the stairs?
Yes. Yeah. This morning it was she thought there was toilet paper on the stairs.
Yeah.
It was not toilet paper, but we all had to take a field trip to go and look at it.
Right.
But it was just like a little gate thing that we have. It's like a fabric gate that Indy had accidentally gotten caught in last night.
Okay, accidentally, as if it's not the third one of these gates.
Yeah, we've had to replace the gate Many times.
Yes, yes. That we basically, I think what happened was that like when Addie was born, we, you know, equal parts wanted a way to like compartmentalize her spaces so that she wasn't like at risk of like falling down the stairs.
Right.
But then they kind of became like more for the dogs.
They're definitely more for the dogs. Like we like to keep the dogs downstairs at night because they will definitely go and jump in Addie's bed with her.
Yes.
Every night, which is so sweet. But it's not so sweet when Addie wakes up in the middle of the night and we have to go in and put her back down again.
I know. Yeah. Well, and I think the worst of it is yeah, like when Indy will go and lay down with Addie in bed, and Addie's big thing right now seems to be feeling lonely at night.
Yes.
Which is such a hard thing to comfort her on.
It's so sad because we don't sleep alone at night.
Exactly. Right. Yeah, yes. Like we have each other, you know?
Right. So it's like, that's fair. I get why you don't want to sleep alone.
Right. So I feel like there have been instances where Indy will go crawl in bed with her and Addie's very happy that she has company.
Right.
But then in the middle of the night, if like one of us gets up to go to the bathroom or something and like Indy hears our door open, then she will jump ship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like a traitor.
Yes. Yeah. 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 She's a fair weather friend.
She is. Yeah. So then Addie wakes up because she can feel the disturbance.
Yeah.
And then she's like, well, I want Indy back in bed with me. And then like you have to go into our bedroom and be like, Indy, you got to go. Like, I don't know how to like communicate this to you right now, but it's 3 a.m. and you need to be.
Right. You need to go.
Right. Yeah. You need to go be in there. You need to go and cuddle Addie for the rest of the night. Can you do that for us? Because like, that's what we're asking of you right now.
Poor Indy.
So anyway, so then we get Addie to school. I feel like it's not uncommon for us to call each other after the drop off.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Sometimes we do that. Yeah. So Ben always takes Addie to school in the morning. So they'll leave. And then that's when I try and throw my clothes on really quick. But sometimes while I'm doing my makeup, I need to like rehash something that Addie did, or I want to see how she did at drop off. So I'll call you pretty much what, 10 like, minutes after you leave.
Right. Yes.
Sometimes you'll call me too.
No, it goes both ways.
Yeah, it goes both ways.
Yeah, it's definitely both of us.
Yeah. And then, so then we get to our works.
Right. And how long does it take before the first text that is non-communicate? Like, it's not like a, hey, did you pay the water bill?
No, it's like a, hey, babe, in all caps.
Right.
that probably takes about 35 minutes.
Yeah. How's work going? What's up? How is everybody? What's the mood like?
What's the office culture like today? Like, you know, or the shop culture.
Right.
Yeah. We're always kind of curious about what's going on. So then we'll start texting. We don't text a ton.
No, I don't think we text a ton, but we probably do say I miss you every day, like at some point.
Yeah, we do that.
Right.
So then we get through our work days texting periodically.
Right.
And normally we're like, what'd you have for lunch? And, you know, like silly things like that throughout the day.
As if they're even very, like, what I think is the funniest thing about this ritual is that we continue to do it. And there's almost no, like, genuine substance. It's, like, it reminds me of how, like when we sleep at night, like, we'll just, like, sort of, like, reach out to each other and, like, touch, like, a foot or something.
Yeah, touch toes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what our texts are. We're just touching toes.
It's just sort of like,
hey.
Right.
Like, thinking about you.
Right, exactly.
It doesn't matter what we're saying. We're just like thinking about each other.
Right, right.
So then we get through our work day and then I'll call you on the way home.
Yeah.
Because, or sometimes I'm already home, but you'll call me on the way home too.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, so.
The obligatory discussion of like, okay, what are we doing for dinner tonight?
Well,
like, what's the game plan?
Right, and then sometimes I'll like pick up Addie. So I leave work early every day, go pick up Addie, and sometimes I'll call him on the way to pick up Addie just to like rehash something or I don't know. But then every once in a while we go and get coffee in the middle of the day.
We do.
Yeah. So there's that.
Well, that is always my favorite too, because like I feel like when I was a kid, there were these like very, very, very rare handful of occasions where like for some reason or another, like my mom would show up at my school to like unexpectedly pick me up for something, not usually like as like a treat, but usually because like there was like a thing going on or whatever. But like you turn the corner in a place that you're not expecting to see like a loved one.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is this kind of like amazing thing where like you'll pull into downtown and I'll get to like run down from the office and like Addie will like turn the corner and it's like I'm getting to like see like these bright spots.
Aww.
Just come like sprinting at me and like Addie will come and give me like a sprinting hug and I'm like, oh, this is literally the best. Like,
I know. Like, it's really sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll go and snag like a coffee for 10-15 minutes.
Right.
In the middle of the day. And then you might call me on your way home.
Right.
And then It's kind of a sprint again between you getting home and bedtime.
It really is. This to me, and tell me what you think, but like, I think the, like being a parent to a young child is kind of interesting because like things fall into rhythm for chunks of time, but it's not like, it's never forever. Mm-hmm. So like, you know, there was like the era of time, like where we would go through the evening and like Addie was in like the potted plant stage where you could like just sort of like place her down.
Yes.
And like you could rest assured that she was pretty much there.
Remember how nice that was?
Yeah. Yeah.
That was so nice.
There was something really wonderful about that. Mm-hmm. And then we would do like the little sink bath every night.
And every night we would give her a bath.
We would.
Now it's lucky if she gets a bath twice a week.
And well, I just talked about when we were at the lake and how I didn't take a shower for the whole week. But I claimed here on the show, I shared this with the world, but I claimed that you said that I didn't smell bad.
You did not. Okay. You did not. But you also like were in the lake a lot, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it was fine.
Lake baths.
It was fine.
Anyway, here's $100 I owe you for confirming that piece of information. Okay. So then, yeah. So you're right though, because I think we go through these evenings and it like, it becomes like a choreographed dance almost.
Yeah.
Because like there are certain beats of the evening we must hit. Like we need to eat. Addie needs to eat. Yeah. We need like a period of time for her to sort of like wind down before bedtime. And then we have like our bedtime ritual, which involves like bath time, brushing teeth, reading books.
Right. But we've gotten smart about that. So we used to do bedtime together every single night.
Which was madness.
That was so silly.
But like, but would we trade it?
Maybe. No. But so now we alternate nights.
We do.
So I'll do bedtime one night. Ben will do bedtime the next night. And honestly, it gives us time just to be alone.
Yes.
And our alone time, probably like we're cleaning the kitchen or prepping the coffee for the next morning.
Right.
So it's nothing fancy, but it is so nice.
It is kind of funny. Like, I think about this almost every single night while I'm not doing bedtime. Mm-hmm. Is that like you go downstairs? Yeah, you like you pull out the vacuum, you make the coffee, you wipe down all the counters, you finish rounding off the dishes or whatever. So that when bedtime is over, we're both settling into like a space that's sort of like ready for the next day of action.
Right.
Yeah. But you're right. Like, because it's like you're working rather. I mean, not hard. Like, it's not like backbreaking work or anything like that. But you're not like just going and sitting and scrolling on your phone or like reading a book or playing a video game or something. Like,
no, you're doing like the chores for the downstairs.
Right, right.
But it is so nice just to get that like night off.
Right. So, okay. The other thing I would say, though, is that Addie, I think, is going through a major phase of negotiations right now, like, which I can't help but feel like reflects both of our personalities right back at us a little bit. Do you ever feel that way?
Yes.
Like we are both people who like on some level sought out like the businessy type of path in life.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of like what we do. And so sometimes like when I see her like negotiating things, part of me is almost like, okay, well it's kind of adorable.
One of us. One of us.
I know. But the problem is that like, I feel like I will bend to her will instantly.
Oh, I will not.
Yeah. No, you are the tough one for sure.
I know. I'm the bad cop. I know.
I like to think of it as the pretty cop.
No, thanks. Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. No, I'm definitely a little more rigid. I think the second that she starts getting her little like, I want this now, I'm just like, mm-mm. Not going to happen.
Like, okay, so walk me through that. Like, if she is determined to have something, like, do you feel like the position of caution is coming from a space that's like we can't set the precedent of I declare I want this thing because then it's just sort of like it's a slippery slope?
Yeah, I think it's kind of like dog training. Like, you wouldn't give dogs treats for barking like at the door like crazy, you know, for no reason.
Right.
Like I feel like, so if she's like demanding something of me without saying please or thank you or having like kind words,
right,
then like there's not a chance I'm going to help.
Right.
With that situation.
See, I feel like you just did something so effortlessly that like I used to tread with caution about so much, which was like before we had Addison, we like, I feel like the dogs, I do feel bad for them sometimes because I feel like they have taken their second fiddle to Addie sometimes. Mm-hmm. And they used to be like a, like the central focus of like our home life. Like, like Indy had like an Instagram, you know,
She had like an embroidered dog bed and she got new toys all the time.
It was a whole thing. And then, I mean, she's been very tolerant of us and everything, but I think the big thing that I always struggled with a bit was like, you know, I know now like that you really can't necessarily compare the two situations very well, but I feel like you would talk to people with kids and I'd be like, well, I'm trying to figure out this thing with my dog. And I'm like, I probably shouldn't compare training my dog to you raising your child.
Yeah. And I'm not sure if that's a comparison you can make without having a kid first.
And maybe that's it.
You
happen to be on the other side of the equation.
Maybe. Yeah. But I mean, dogs are a lot of work.
They are.
They really are. And they are babies, right? You know, and they do need a lot of attention and love. And you know, and they have taken more of a backseat with us because we've had Addie and everything that's been really busy. But also, they've gotten another human.
Right.
To love on them.
It's true.
So, you know, like where we're lacking, Addie is picking up that slack.
It's true. I mean, her first word was dog.
Yeah. I mean, she's obsessed with them. She wants them to sleep with her. She'll play like ball with them.
I think probably the funniest thing that she's doing right now, and Indy is much better about it than Chewy, but like Indy's our Australian Shepherd, and Addie will go up and like just hug them both. And Indy will just sort of be like,
I hate this.
Yeah. Like, it's like, can you get her off me, please? But Chewy, I'm like, he's going to bite her face.
Yeah.
Like,
but I don't think he will.
I don't think he will.
I think he's really loud, but yeah. I don't think he'll actually do anything, but he definitely does not like it. He's getting grumpier.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay,
so speaking of the pups, one of the stories I told recently is we have a lady who walks by our house.
Oh gosh, I already know what you're gonna say.
I want to hear what you want to say about
it. Is it the lady that barks at him?
It's the lady that barks at him.
Oh my gosh. I just don't understand how she thinks this is gonna be helpful.
I know.
So I guess there's this lady who walks her small dogs.
Right.
And Chewy will bark at anybody that walks by.
Yeah.
Because he thinks he's doing a job. He barks at them. They walk away.
And every single time he's basically confirmed to himself over and over and over
that
again,
he's protecting the house. Got them to go away.
Right.
He comes back all puffed up.
Oh,
he's like,
does.
Oh, I'm the best dog that ever lived.
All right. Yeah.
You know?
He's got kind of like a cocky walk.
Yes,
doesn't he? Yeah.
He does. He starts this little trot thing back and forth on his front legs. It's so funny. So there's this one lady who does not like that he barks, and we are actually very good. We've had a dog trainer come out. We are constantly watching for this.
Right.
You know, we are hyper aware. We do not want to be the neighbors with the yappy dog.
I know. And it's the thing that's like, it's so hard. It's like every single time that this happens, when somebody like walks by, I like, there's this compulsion in my mind to like walk out and like tell them the whole story.
Right.
Like, it's like, I understand that they barked at you, and I totally get that.
But they've gotten a lot better about it.
They have.
But he sees this one lady walk by, and he gets after her because she leans down, like all the way down, and starts barking at him.
Yeah.
And like, that's not going to help the situation.
No, it's not. But I think, and the reason I bring it up is because last night we were out with Addison out on her scooter, mm-hmm. and we were just, you know, basically rolling through the neighborhoods. And it was awesome because I felt like we were, we took a path we don't normally take. And I feel like we were meeting people. We were talking to people. People were like waving, and they're like, oh, you guys are the ones on the corner.
And they even brought up Chewy. They're like, oh, he's so funny.
Right. But then who do we see walking down the street behind us, mm-hmm. but this very lady?
The barking lady.
And then what happened? We passed no fewer than two other people walking their dogs, and their dogs just walking across the street barked at this lady.
Yeah.
And I was like, I think there's a chance that this might be you.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're right, actually.
Wasn't that strange?
Yeah. It makes me feel a little less bad about Chewy.
Yeah.
Because everybody's dogs bark a little bit.
I know.
You know, unless they're perfectly trained dogs.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't feel so bad about it anymore.
That's good. Mm-hmm. That's good. Okay. All right. Well, so the next thing that I had on our agenda for today is you have sort of like an interesting backstory as far as like giving and doing interviews. Like before we ever met, you had, would you
this
call
is it? Why you wouldn't bring up the topics ahead of time.
Yeah, I wasn't going to tell you anything.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so would you call it a hobby?
What's that?
So my wife here was once a pageant girl and was...
My heart like just literally was like, oh my God, I'm getting anxious. I can feel the anxiety.
The anxiety, yep. So you were... And this is actually kind of crazy because you grew up in more of like the Salem region where like the shop is like, you know, that's...
Currently.
Yes.
Yep.
But like, and then so we're all like kind of in the general Roanoke area.
Yes.
But are. Jay and I have talked a lot about like we grew up in a slightly more rural area, which was Franklin County, Virginia, or Rocky Mount. And so at some point in time, you were able to compete in Miss Franklin County and won.
Yes, I did.
And you had like a crown and a sash.
I had a crown and a sash. So I competed. Is competed the right term? It feels weird.
You tell me.
To say that.
Yeah.
I was competing in pageants while I was in college. They did help pay for a chunk of school.
Okay. So there's that.
Yeah. And I only won one local.
Okay.
So I competed several times in locals.
Right.
And I always placed, which was like in my brain, like the best thing to do with pageants is to place because then you get scholarships, but you don't have any of the responsibilities and you don't have to go compete in Miss Virginia.
Right.
So placing as high as you can without winning is like the ultimate.
Right.
But when I went and I did compete in Miss Greater Franklin County.
Nice.
And I won.
What was, walk us through, like, so did you, like, what things did you have to do? Like
in the pageants?
Yeah, like, what were your,
so
like,
at this time, they've changed since then.
Okay.
You would do interview.
Okay.
And so you.
Do you remember anything about your interview?
Yeah. Oh, gosh, yes. The interview was, like, one of the scarier parts.
I think it would be this one of the scarier parts, and I completely understand why. Because, like, this is... You've seen the tapes before of like pageant contestants who I would argue, because I've met some of your friends who do this, are sharp. Like,
these ladies, women, they are so smart.
Right.
They are up to date on current events. They have like well-formed opinions, researched opinions.
Right.
They just are just so well equipped.
Right. But so it's like when you see any of like the interviews where like somebody goes to like give an answer and clearly like their mind clouded in the moment.
That happened to me.
Did it?
Yeah, it happened to me. So there's the interview, the private interview where you're just one person in front of all the judges and it's just question after question.
Are you like in a gown or something?
No,
for that?
No, you're like in an interview suit.
Oh.
So okay. This happens before the stage part even happens.
Okay.
So you are in your interview suit, you get like a certain time and you go in and there's I guess maybe 5 to 7 judges.
Okay.
And all of them are prepped with questions.
And what is that environment like? Like, are do you feel
very
like
professional?
It's very professional. Like, mm-hmm. do you feel like it's like a job interview? Do you feel like grilled?
Because it is a job interview.
Okay.
You are interviewing to hold this position to be a representative for this area.
Okay. So I mean, you had to expand on that because I don't think that's something, at least this is not something I would have known about the world of pageants.
Yeah.
Like if you, like when I grew up and you played like in a, you know, a soccer tournament or whatever, if you won the soccer tournament, they would have some guy with a microphone at the end of the day next to the cooler full of juice boxes and he would present you with a trophy and your team would all go jump around in a circle and take pictures and then mm-hmm. you were done, you went home and that was the end of it.
No. So if you win a pageant, you are the volunteer for that community for the next year.
So you have a job for a year?
Yes.
And but a volunteer, are you paid?
You are not paid.
So where do you live?
Well, so you still live at home.
You still live at home.
But that's where if you're a title holder and you're from a different town, okay. Or area, it is a little bit more difficult to travel back to that area. You have to be prepared to do that.
Okay.
So you have to make appearances for them. You have to do volunteer work in that area.
Okay. So like would you go like visit a school or something?
Yes.
Okay.
100%. So I did that entire year as Miss Greater Franklin County. I was traveling to Franklin County for parades, for school functions. I would go and talk to classrooms. All kinds of things like that.
Did Did you ever have any sense of like imposter syndrome doing that? Like, did you ever feel like...
No.
I was like...
No. No. What does that say about me?
You're like, I'm awesome.
I know, it's terrible. No, I think I was just... I mean, at that point, I think I enjoyed interacting with people a lot more in that respect. The pageant part of it itself was way more where I had the imposter syndrome.
Okay. Okay. I mean, that's fair. I mean, yeah. I remember the sensation just even simply like walking into any high school or college like day where there's like an exam. Mm-hmm. And sometimes like you would see like the other kids like with their like very neatly organized like flashcards or like, you know, like they would like flipping through their notes with like lots of like highlighter streaks and stuff like that. And you were like, I didn't do any of that. Like, where did you learn to do that? I don't know what that is.
Yeah.
And it didn't always mean that they got a better grade, but like, it's, you know, sometimes like that could be intimidating because you're like, because then in your mind you look at it and you're like, why didn't I prepare the way that they are preparing?
Walking into like backstage of a pageant, it's probably one of the most intimidating things you could do.
I could imagine.
At least to me.
Yeah I'm sure there's a whole lot of stuff flying back there. Okay, so you've done your interview.
Yeah, so you go in, they ask you a lot of questions, and I remember like it was the first time I'd heard about carbon footprint.
Okay.
So they asked, they're like, what do you think your carbon footprint is?
Okay.
And I think they were just feeling you out to see if it's like, do you even know what this is?
Sure.
You know, and another question was like, if you could be on the cover of any magazine, what magazine would you want to be on?
Would you say?
I said Forbes.
Nice. I think that's a good answer.
I know. I think all of them got really quiet after that. They were like,
oh,
Forbes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I mean, and since then, I mean, I feel like Nude, your shop is like winning awards, and you've been on the cover of the Roanoke magazine.
Right. I should have said the Roanoke.
I know. Yeah. That would have been, well, you've done that one now.
I know. Yeah. Check. That was really cool.
It was really cool.
So you have the private interview, and that is a big chunk of your scoring. So your scoring is like broken down into percentages.
Okay.
So, It probably would have been 20-25%.
So would you say at all that there's any like misconception that I mean, as much as the, like when we think of like beauty pageants and it, is this...
Well, you just called it a beauty pageant.
I know. Right.
Yeah,
yes.
Right.
But you don't call it a beauty pageant.
No.
It's just a pageant.
Man. Yeah. Yeah. So a beauty pageant would be like a very like kind of an older term to use.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Okay. But there are some pageants that are more aesthetically based.
Okay.
But the one I was doing, it was through the Miss America system. It was definitely more of a, I don't know, a diversified like
pool of types of questions and stuff like that.
Yeah. Okay. So you would do your interview, you'd check that off the list. And then normally it was that evening or the next day, you would do the stage portion.
Okay.
And that consists of like your evening gown.
Okay.
Which is maybe only 10% of your score.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Is that where a lot of expense goes?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So evening gown was one. What's another? Swimsuit.
Okay. You did that.
I did that. Oh gosh, that was intimidating.
That would be intimidating.
Yeah. So swimsuit. Also, that's not a huge portion. And now they don't even do swimsuit anymore. They do like fitness, I think.
Okay. Okay.
And then talent.
Talent.
Which is a big portion.
What percent is talent of it, do you think?
I would say about 20-25% maybe.
Okay.
Maybe 30. I'm not sure.
And what was your talent?
Musical theater.
Musical theater. What did you do?
Well, so I filtered through a few things. I did a song from Guys and Dolls.
Okay.
And that's the one I took. When I won Miss Greater Franklin County, that's the one I won with. It's kind of like a little comedic skit.
Okay.
It's about a woman who, I think she really wants to get engaged or get married, and he just won't do it. And so she's like making herself sick. Like she's getting a cold and all these things throughout the song. You know, she's getting like sicker throughout the song because she's... Whatever. So anyways, that was the talent. I also did Popular from Wicked.
I want to see this so bad. I would pay any amount of money available to be able to witness this exact thing. Because while, like, when we first started dating and you told me that you had done this before, I had not seen Wicked. And so, like, in my head, I was just sort of like, oh, like, you know, this is like highbrow theater. This is like, you know.
No, it's like, very fun.
It's so fun. Yeah, it is so fun. Like, now that I've seen, like, you know, I've seen Wicked and we've seen it on Broadway together. Like, I'm like, oh my gosh, like, this would be incredible.
But it wasn't the whole song. You're only allowed to do like a 90-second talent or something like that.
Is it that short?
Yeah, it's not very long. So I had the song cut. And I am not a soprano. Like, I can't sing high notes. So I made sure it was cut to an area that was on the alto side of things.
Okay.
Yeah. So I didn't have to do those higher.
Do you know all the words to the song?
I did. I bet I still do.
Really?
Yeah, I bet so.
Okay.
I'm going to get in my car after this and go sing it.
Can you film it? We'll include it at the end of the episode.
I don't think so. I don't think so. Mm-mm. So, yeah, so you do your talent, and then there's onstage question, which is what is filmed for everybody. And that's what gets all the attention.
That's because, I mean, I think probably a lot of the misconception that, I mean, you know, it that you see is that probably a lot of what ends up going mega viral is when people kind of fumble.
Yes. And that happened. So that's what happened to me. I think it was at Miss Virginia.
Okay. So you, sorry, I'm going to back up one quick question. So you won Miss Greater Franklin County.
So I won Miss Greater Franklin County. Once you win that, you hold that title for a year. You do appearances throughout the year for that. But in the middle of the year, you compete for Miss Virginia.
Okay.
And if you win Miss Virginia, you, your local title goes to the runner up.
Oh, wow.
Yes. Okay. So the runner up will take on your duties for the rest of the year.
And then if you win Miss Virginia, that's when you're like on like the stage that people would see like on like nationally televised.
Yes.
Like,
thing. And if you win Miss Virginia, you go to Miss America.
And there's just one Miss Virginia.
Yep. Just one Miss Virginia each year.
Okay.
Yeah. I think there's a statistic that says like if your daughter makes it to Miss America, like you're more likely to have a son that makes it to the NFL than you are to have a daughter that makes it to Miss America.
Whoa.
Yeah, which is, I mean, there's lots of NFL players, but only one from each state.
Yeah, okay. I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah,
it makes sense.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
So, So I won my local title. I got to Miss Virginia, and I was a ball of anxiety.
I'm sure.
Did
it feel different? Like, were you like in a, like a larger venue, bigger lights?
Yes.
Like
more. Yes. All of the above.
Okay.
So you had to move into a hotel for a week.
Okay.
And you have your roommate, which is another girl that's competing.
Okay.
Which I was really lucky. I had a great roommate.
That's awesome.
And so you're just spending the whole week in rehearsals for the actual stage show, which used to be televised.
Okay.
It might still be. And then you're making appearances all week as a group, you know, you're just in it.
Okay.
So it's pretty typical for somebody to compete in locals for 2, 3, 4 years and then win Miss Virginia. So you have to go back to Miss Virginia several times before you get good.
So like it wouldn't be uncommon for the person who wins like Miss Virginia this year to have already been on that stage
multiple times,
at least a good few
times.
Yes. Okay.
Absolutely. It would be incredibly rare for somebody to come in and sweep it.
And just go. Okay.
And that would be a very, very special person, which has happened before.
Right.
So my first year, get in there, really nervous. I walk into my private interview and one of the first questions they asked me was, why do you want to be Miss Virginia? And I replied, I don't.
Oh, my gosh.
Which was horrible.
No, probably not the answer they wanted.
But I was so anxious. I didn't want to be Miss Virginia at that point. I'm like, well, there's no point in lying.
Right.
You know?
Where would you live if you win Miss Virginia?
I believe it's Roanoke.
Is really?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Because the Miss Virginia pageant takes place in Roanoke.
Who knew?
For the whole state. Mm-hmm. Where we host it.
Okay.
Yep.
I'm learning so many things.
I know, gosh, I can't believe we're still talking about pageants.
No, I think it's amazing. I think it's amazing. Well, and it's interesting too, because I think it gave me like a partially skewed perspective, I think, on who I thought you were,
right.
Like when I first met you, because I mean, whether it was ever intended or not, I had just generally preconceived notions of what that could have meant. And I think it was always fascinating to be like there's a in the TV show, like How I Met Your Mother, there's this like one episode where like all of the characters are going through and they're having these like glass shattering moments where like someone's like, have you guys ever noticed that Ted always says this? And then it's like, and it makes like a glass shattering noise. And then for the rest of the episode, they all just keep noticing each other's like isms.
Yeah.
And so I feel like it was honestly really cool, because I feel like I met you and I was like expecting you to be this like very over the top kind of personality, like very like, you know,
bubbly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm
not. No, yeah. You're like so much more like down to earth and chill and almost like at times, like even like I would say like moderately like reserved. Like,
yeah.
You don't need a spotlight.
Mm-mm,
of course, no. It just follows you everywhere.
Oh,
you go.
Oh my goodness, you know, gracious.
Look at this girl.
Like, oh, stop. But yeah, so interview happened.
Okay.
I kind of really messed it up.
So they did not want to hear that, for real. Like that,
I
like
mean,
there wasn't something refreshing about that.
I'm sure it was, but I just told them I didn't want the job.
Okay.
You know, so it's like I told them, don't pick me for this job. Not that I even was in the running at this point, because there were some really amazing women.
Okay.
Yeah.
But so like in any amount of hindsight, like when you look back on that, like obviously, like you said, I mean, like most people who are going to win they're going back year in, year out. They're competing multiple times. They and maybe it's not even uncommon for the first time people get there just to be like the intensity of the situation is just so much.
It's a lot. Yeah. You have to get used to it. You have to get your bearings. It's a whole thing.
Right.
So that was my private interview, and I go through everything else, and it's not so bad. Like I get through everything.
Okay.
It took me forever to get the swimsuit walk. Right.
Sure.
You know, but then I can't even remember the question they asked me on stage. It was the onstage interview question, and it was one of those things. My brain went blank. There was nothing in there.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So they asked me the question. I don't remember what it was. And I remember standing there. There's all these lights on you. And you can see kind of these like, you can't even see faces. You can just see like the outlines of heads out in the audience. And this is at the Civic Center, the Berglund Center.
Yeah. Yeah. The concert venue where Jay used to work.
Yeah. So it's a really big place. And I was just standing there and they had asked. And I was like, I could hear like rappers in the audience. It was so quiet.
Yeah.
And I could just hear like the seats getting I could feel people getting uncomfortable for me.
Oh no.
Yeah. So I was up there and I could see all that, and they asked me the question, and I think I fumbled through something and the music played to get me off stage, you know, because it was like, all right.
Right. Like, I mean,
let's wrap it up.
At least there was a layer of, you know, like normally at like the Oscars or whatever, if they're playing like the wrap up music, it's like, okay, like, mm-hmm. Come on now. You need to like cut it short. This maybe like was almost like a gracious.
It was a pity.
Yeah.
A little pity thing. Like, yeah. Yeah. They were like, oh, get this girl off stage. Poor thing. So I walked off stage and our choreographer was back there, and he just like, yeah, I think what was he, French? Maybe, I'm not sure, but he just patted me on the shoulder and sent me away. And I'm like, I know it was terrible.
So what is your reaction after that? Because I think I've had like moments before where I've definitely had like the deer in the headlights, you know, sensation. Notably, actually, I guess right before you and I would have like properly met, Jonathan Jay got married, and I was giving the best man speech, and I was just like, you know, rot. Like, I mean, it was so...
You're emotional.
It was very emotional.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there was...
I wish I had emotion that night. I wish I had something.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. I think that your brain probably is like, is protecting you on, I'm sure, on some, like, from yourself even.
Maybe.
Where maybe. It's just sort of like, you know, you, I don't know. The doors of your mind were shut.
Right. They did. They just shut hard. So after those were the preliminary nights, like you compete two nights, and then there's the final night where only the top 10 compete.
Okay.
So that was one of the preliminary nights. And after the preliminary nights are over, you get a visitation from your family where you go into this ballroom in a hotel. You're like sitting at your table and you wait for your family to come in.
Okay.
And I remember
the Hunger Games really like understood some aspects of this whole thing.
Yeah, they did. So I'm sitting there at my round table and I've got full pageant makeup on. My hair is done. I'm wearing a sequin dress and I'm sitting there slumped down eating a box of Whale's crackers, just shoveling it into my mouth.
Nice.
And my mom said, my mom told me, she was like, you've never looked more beautiful. And I'm like, well, it's a good thing. Like, I've got makeup on because, like, literally, there's nothing in my brain. Oh. Like, I gotta have something.
Well, we know that's not true.
No, well, that night. But she said it was, like, the prettiest and funniest she'd ever seen me.
Oh.
I think she was making me feel better.
No, I mean, imagine for a moment what it would be like to be watching Addison up there.
Oh, gosh, I know.
You know, like, I mean, it really is like, and it's like, I mean, you could almost even see, like, it kind of gives me like very mixed feelings. Like I don't like the idea. And obviously the people who are participating because it's a journey they want to be on.
Yes.
But like, there's a piece of me that I can feel like my insides almost like squirming at the thought of like people judging like Addison in such a very singular capacity. Right. Like, it's like, that's like painful to think about. Like,
but you know, that's a good perspective though, because just in my brain, just in that split second, you know, I've always looked back on that memory with like embarrassment. And now it's like, if that was Addison, I would be like so proud of her.
Of course.
Like, that's so brave. Right. All these girls doing this are so brave.
Yes.
That's right. And they have to you have to be brave. You have to like know yourself
right
well enough to like,
I mean, it takes
yourself out there.
Right. Such an enormous amount of confidence to be like willing to go and be a part of that equation. And
right.
And I think that it's something that it's easy for anyone to take for granted, because they're probably like looking at like a lot of these women, you're like, well, life is probably came easily.
No, yeah. You know? And that's just not the case. Anybody I've ever competed with, I still have friends from that community.
Yeah.
I mean, they are successful, driven people.
Yeah, well, and so one of them notably is your friend Madison, who we've spent some time with, and I know that you guys were competing, I think, in Miss Roanoke. Is that where
we competed together a few times? But Miss Roanoke Valley was one of the most notable ones,
and she won, and you were the runner-up.
I was first runner-up. Yep.
And so, but like, you guys had like a really special moment on stage, like before they announced, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you guys sort of like you guys kind of knew like it's me or you.
Yeah, we had a feeling that was the case. But we were, honestly, she had gotten me like into pageants in a way.
Okay.
And she had made like a special binder for me to like help me prep.
So you're just good people.
I know. I mean, honestly, I mean, you know, you make fun of these like clips of people you see where they're like so excited for the girl who won, but it's actually true.
That's exactly what I was going to tee you up to give that exact thing, because you're exactly right. Like, there's the, like, we watch, I don't know, Survivor or, you know, any of these other reality TV shows. And the person who comes in second, it's like, they've put so much into this and it's devastating. Mm-hmm. And like, you can't help but be like, it's definitely devastating. And so when you see like the moment come down to, and it like potentially is like these two women who are standing next to each other, you can't help but think like, this is going to be really great for one person and really bad for the other person. Mm-hmm. But like, whenever you've told me this story about you and Madison, I've always felt as though it was just pure, genuine, like, you guys both knew you did great and you were both rooting for each other. And it was like, her name gets called and you were like, I mean, fill in the blanks. Like,
yeah, no, I mean, it's kind of the same way we are in life now. Like, we're still rooting for each other.
Right.
We're still so excited for each other whenever we get a win.
Right, right. Well, and Jay and I talk about this all the time, because we do think it's like one of those things in life where like social media can add an interesting layer, because like, it gives you the ability to usually keep up with the people in life and like what they're up to and like what seasons they're going through and, you know, kids and jobs and houses and, you know, like whatever the case may be. And there's like, There's two different mindsets. There's the scarcity mindset, which is that like, you see somebody that you used to be friends with in college or whatever have some big win, and you're like, well, that's one less win available for me to get. Mm-hmm. And you feel like that sense of like jealousy or like, you know, well, that like, you know, like you're not happy for them. Mm-hmm. But then on the flip side, I think that this is like a really great lesson where it's like there's an abundance mindset. There's the idea that it's sort of like, it's like if they can win, maybe I can too.
Yeah.
You know,
and I like that.
Yeah. And it just kind of like helps. I think if you can mentally position yourself differently in that way, it's going to help everyone.
Right. I totally agree with you.
Yeah. So anyway, pageants.
Oh, can't believe we just spent however long, 30 minutes talking about that.
I know. Good times. Transition?
Sure.
That's the noise it'll play right there.
Okay, cool.
Okay, now I have another juicy one for you.
Oh, dear.
Okay, so we had a rather interesting experience. We've touched on it just a little bit earlier. You and I went to New York City earlier this year. Mm-hmm. And we saw Wicked on Broadway.
Yes, we did.
And then we went out for drinks the next night.
Yes, we did.
Who did we go with?
We went with our dear friend now, who was somebody I dated in college,
We went out to have drinks with one of your exes.
Yes.
And there in his now very lovely girlfriend.
Yes.
And so I think this is really interesting because you and I think in our relationship have done a what I believe to be something, at least even in my own past relationships, I was not always great about doing. I think we have a really great dialogue about the people in our past.
Yes, I think I think we talk openly about it, our experiences, good, bad, ugly. Yeah, all right. Of it.
Yes, like we I don't think we shy away from like you know, almost. Like,
no, it's a big part of our life.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's like you can actually tell a story about like a time where something really great happened with a prior significant other. And it's like that it's kind of that same scarcity abundance thing. It's like it doesn't mean just because you had a great day with someone else at a different point in your history that means that you want to go back to that moment.
No way.
Like,
yeah.
And I think it's something that I think demonstrates like our confidence in each other and, mm-hmm. you know, the strength of our relationship. But so that being said, like David is somebody who would have crossed paths with us. Well, you obviously very significantly, but like we were all within like literal feet of each other while we were at college.
Yeah, so we all attended the same college.
Yes.
So we were all at Radford. I guess we kind of had known each other at this point, or like we were...
Me and you?
Yes.
Yes, we would have had like the famous business law class together.
Yes, but yes. It wasn't anything where we were hanging out or...
No.
Like talking or anything like that. David and I met my sophomore year.
Okay.
Which I think is maybe when business law was happening too.
I think we would have just come. I can't remember exactly, but I want to say that business law was second semester freshman year. So we would have gone through that whole semester, and not really ended up like speaking in any meaningful capacity at all, other than my left on red message to you on Facebook for 7 years. No problem.
I'm so sorry about that.
It's okay. We figured it out in the end. But anyway, David ended up being an RA in the same dorm building that I was in my freshman year.
Yeah. So David was an RA. And David and I dated for a couple years, maybe.
Okay.
In college. But I mean, my relationship with him, I always describe it as like very like positive and happy, and it was almost like we were just like kids, like just trying to figure it out.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and you guys are both upon meeting him, I look immediately like very like bright-eyed people.
Yeah,
you know? And I think that definitely that shone through. But one of the like long-running theories that I've always had about people's exes is that they usually would be great friends for your significant other because you are uniquely a common thread that then like him and I would share.
Right.
Which and so it was very interesting like to go, because I'm fairly intimidated by this guy. like,
no.
Well, I mean,
not now.
No. Like, I think going into this particular occasion, I mean, guys, not for nothing, but David's gorgeous.
He's like, a pretty person.
He is. And really, I mean, pretty. he has the kind of smile that like literally like lights up a room. And he's an actor. So like, yeah. You know, there's all this stuff going on with David to where like, you know, he walks in and I'm like, oh boy, like, here we go.
Were fast friends.
Fast friends. But what was it like for you, like in terms of like sitting down and like, was there any weirdness, like any concern as to like how that meeting could have gone?
Well, I know you and I knew David. I haven't seen David in years at this point.
Yeah.
But the David I knew and who you are would absolutely get along.
Right.
So I'm like, as long as nothing has changed drastically, this is going to be a really fun night.
Yeah.
And I was so excited to see him because at the end of the day, like, David and I did date, but like, I say all the time, we're soul sisters in a way. Me and David, you know, like, it's like you meet people and you can just tell they've like, their soul has traveled with your soul. I don't know. It's very strange, but, and like, you're one of those people. So sitting down that night, it felt just like home and very comfortable. And even David's new girlfriend, Isabel, was so kind. And I hit it off with her immediately. So like, even though David, like, they both sat down immediately, she and I had our own conversation going.
Well, so the rule applied for you guys as
well. It did. Yeah, right. It worked for, David too. Yeah.
Right.
So, I mean, the whole night, I just felt like a kindred spirit, like, just with both of them.
Right. Well, and one of the things that I thought was really funny was about this evening was that, like, you and I, like, if we're going to go, like, our happy place at home is usually, like, going to a brewery with any of our friends and just sort of, like, sitting down in a rather, like, casual atmosphere and having kind of, like, idle chatter. Like,
yes.
It's not necessarily always, like,
a grand thing.
No, you know, and I think that there's almost nothing better. Like, we talk a lot about the concept of like the third place. So you've got like your home, you've got your work, and then there's like the third place, like where you go.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I don't know that we always have like a very well established third place, like, necessarily, but going to like, you know, one of the local breweries is probably the closest version of it we've got, where like extending the invitation for any of our friends to meet us there is not like nobody needs to put it on their calendar.
You know,
we don't need to like plan for this. It's just sort of like y'all want to grab a drink after work type situation.
Yeah, right.
Like,
it's no very big easy. Deal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we'll just go pop over. But so what I thought was interesting about this evening with David was that I had been in New York for one of the live shows that we did for the Through the Gryffindor podcast. And while I was there with the team, we went to this fun, like, rooftop bar called Star Child. And so like, while we're in New York, it's kind of like one of these things that I was like somewhat eager, you know, to be like, oh, like, you know, like, let me show you like this place we went or whatever. But we ended up going to this, like, I mean, it was cool, but it was weird.
The
bar we went to.
Yeah. So Star Child was closed. So we went to their interior version or something, but it was like a vampire's lair. It's totally my vibe, but like, I like to see what I'm drinking.
Yeah, well, there's that. Yeah. It was very
dark. Yeah.
It was very like the whole menu was like they had clearly gone through and created like a bunch of like very trippy, like AI art images that accompanied.
Oh, the drinks were wild.
They were like,
they made no sense.
And like, one of the drinks literally just came like with a rock. If you ordered it, I think there's an episode now of Parks and Rec maybe where like they go to like this super fancy bar and instead of like ordering like a cocktail, they like literally open like a little wooden chest and you like breathe the air of like do you remember this?
Yeah. Like, I mean, the whole thing, yeah, the drinks, I mean, it was just comical.
It was comical.
We were all out of our league.
Well, we were. Like, so like we're sitting there and I think this is kind of like, you know, maybe a little bit like the nerves associated. Like we all sit down, we all kind of like flip through the menu. Everybody kind of fumbles their way towards like ordering a drink. We go through those drinks like over the course of, you know, an hour with discussion and everything that's kind of happening. And I think at some point in time, David just like literally leans over the table and he's like, guys, I don't mean to be rude at all. this is not really our vibe. Can we go somewhere else?
and we were like, same.
Yeah, like exactly. So then we like walked out the street and he like, I don't know, took us like a, you know, like a pub or whatever. We all sat down and had a beer and there was like kind of loud music and a vaguely sticky table. And it was sort of like,
this home. Is better. Yeah. Yeah, it was so fun.
It was fun. It was fun. Okay. So that was like one of those things where I was like, I didn't mean to like put you in like a hot seat or anything. But I was
no,
like,
that's not a hot seat. Honestly, I think we've become friends with him. I think if you were to go to New York, you would probably...
Oh, I would just go grab a drink with him.
You would just go and hang out with him.
Yeah. 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 It'd be awesome. So, and he also, we bonded over the Outdoor Boys YouTube channel.
Yep.
And the day that Luke announced that he was no longer going to be doing the show anymore, he sent me a text and he was just like, dude, if you need anybody to talk to, just let me know. Like, we're in this together. Yeah. Like, thanks, buddy.
Yeah. So sweet.
I know. So it ended up working out really great. So kind of a wonderful experience, which I think is in a good segue because the next thing I think that's kind of interesting to talk about with our relationship in general is I think it can start in a couple different ways. But like when we first started talking, I think one of the things that you brought up right away was our signs. So I'm a Scorpio and you're a Leo.
Yes.
Right?
Yep.
And
I didn't realize this was like a red flag thing.
What do you mean?
I guess like it's kind of like known to be like a red flag thing if a girl brings up star signs like right out of the gate.
Well, it's fine.
I'm just a walking red flag.
No.
Yeah. So you're a Scorpio. I'm a Leo.
Right. And not necessarily like, at least as far as the knowledge of the space would be concerned, the most obvious pairings.
Like, well, maybe. We're not the most compatible.
That's what I mean.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, this is, you know, got to take it loosely.
Of course.
But I think, and I have actually found this to be true. Like, so I think we're kind of a power couple in a way.
You think we're a power couple?
I think we both have very strong, like, ideas and thoughts about our life. We want our life to be a certain way.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, I would say that we're both pretty big dreamers in that capacity.
Yes. Yeah. I think we're constant. And I think maybe that's why we talk so much is because we're constantly dreaming up new ideas for our home.
For Addison.
Or for Addison, for trips, for like ourselves as individuals. You know, like we're just constantly coming up with these ideas and these thoughts and bouncing them off of each other. But on the flip side of that, I also like read at the beginning of our relationship that we can be volatile.
Yeah.
So things are either like really, really good or we're fuming.
I don't think we have, like not that we've never had, arguments before or even ones that have, you know, become like more intense throughout the course of our relationship. But like, I don't think that we kind of have that like volatile nature to us. Like you're looking at me like that's not true. Am I misunderstanding?
I mean, maybe not volatile. We're not going to blow up, but we definitely have moments where we're heated.
Well, I guess that is true. That is true. And, but like, I would say that like those feel like not the, like, I wouldn't be concerned on any, like, on the first of any month, I wouldn't be concerned that was going to happen in the next 30 days.
No. It's very rare for us to get that mad at each other.
Right.
But I think it's natural to get mad at somebody you're living with, you're raising a child with, you know, you're navigating all of these life circumstances together. Like, it's natural you're going to reach a boiling point and you've got to vent it.
Right. But I think the other thing too, that you and I have gotten very like more acquainted with, I would even say throughout the course of our relationship is like, there's a certain degree, I think when you first start dating somebody where it's like, you almost don't want to like rock the boat super aggressively. And so like, and on some level, it might even be the case that like, it's not even your position to hold concern with specific things, even if they are things that you have concerns with. And I'm sure everybody handles these moments a little bit differently. Mm-hmm. But like, I think sometimes like what you've had to deal with me was things that like may have like bothered me early on that I didn't feel like I had any right to express discontent with.
Right.
But then as time went on, it was almost like then I almost like it did arise. And right. It was almost like, well, now it's been bottled for too long. Like it almost got like,
we have to vent it extra long.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So you like, but I think that what we've learned is that like when these moments occur, it's way better to talk about it before you bottle it for
again
ever.
Right. Yeah. Know? No need to bottle anything up.
Right. Just
I don't.
Yeah. You are definitely a lot better about like kind of the flash in the pan type of intensity, I think. Where yeah.
Like I'll get angry about something or upset about something and then like I'll have my moment where I'm upset and then 5 minutes later I could be fine.
Right.
Like, okay, got it out of my system. Had to say it.
Right.
I'm better now.
It literally reminds me of like when people are cooking and they pour, I don't even know, like alcohol or liquor onto the skillet and they're like, you know, it's like, whoa. but then like it all tastes good.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Thank goodness.
But no, so actually that's not what I was going to talk about even specifically, but it was, I think that we have found a really kind of fascinating cross section where like when we first got together, I think that like you had a lot of various interests and like kind of like eclectic things that you liked. And I had like a bunch of like probably more, I don't want to say like maybe like sporty interest that I think, you know, were kind of like in their own camp. Mm-hmm. And then hilariously, like one of the things we would have had in common was like Harry Potter. Like
yeah.
It was like what I was doing for work. And like the very first night we ever met, you were literally like planning a Harry Potter party
yeah.
with your friends that I would ultimately not even go to because we weren't close enough at that time
right.
for that to like even be a thing to have happened.
Yep.
And I think what's hilarious is that I think when we first started dating, it was kind of like, this is this interest of mine, this is who I am, and you need to like embrace it. And I think that like that was almost something where it was like, we were never good at fully and properly introducing those things to each other. And then I would even say that like Harry Potter, as much as a huge part of my life, has never really become like a common shared space thing that we do a whole lot together. But what I do think is really interesting is the two ways in which we have found the overlapping Venn diagrams. And I would say those two things are period pieces and F1.
Right? Those have become our things.
Right?
Yeah.
Right? Like, and I think it's cool because I think like, I hope it's okay to say this. I think that we both enjoy both of those things non-ironically, fully and completely.
Yeah, I think so.
like we get up and we like watch F1 on the weekends. There are times like where we will literally like take our camping mattress, set it up in the living room because the race is going to come on at like 5 a.m.
Right. And we'll just sleep in the living room.
And then turn it on when
it comes on.
And turn
it on and like have coffee on our mattress in the living room.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so fun.
It's so fun. But then at night, like we've watched Downton Abbey, Gilded Age, Bridgerton, you know, like a lot of the, you know, those types of things.
Oh, I love that stuff.
But the same thing, it's like you're not wringing my arm.
No, like, I'm not. Like, yeah. You get excited about it. Oh my gosh, when you, I don't want to give away any spoilers, but like he audibly gasps during Gilded Age. He is so invested in Mrs. Russell. Like, he is her number one fan.
It's so true. I mean, and she's not always perfect, but like, goodness gracious, if she's not going for it,
really is.
I mean, yeah. So it's there's one moment in particular where she has this win, and I was like punching Alice. I'm like, shut up, babe. She did it.
Oh, so sweet.
It was so sweet. Yeah. And so who's your driver? Hmm? Who's your driver for F1?
Oh, my driver. Oh gosh. Carlos. Carlos Sainz. If you haven't looked him up, look him up. You'll see why.
Yeah. He's beautiful.
He's beautiful. But now you have to root for him because he's an underdog.
He is an underdog. Yep. Yep. Because where was he racing?
He was at Ferrari.
Yep.
Which is like the coveted spot.
Right.
And he was doing really well for Ferrari.
He was. Yeah.
He was kicking butt.
Right.
But Lewis Hamilton came up and
who's Lewis Hamilton?
Lewis Hamilton is a 7-time yep. world champion.
Yep.
So he got scooped up by Ferrari and they dropped Carlos.
Yep.
Lewis Hamilton has since
he's not had a great season.
He's fallen from good graces. He's had a bad season. So he's driving kind of poorly for Ferrari, unfortunately.
Yep.
Carlos got picked up by one of the worst teams Williams.
Yep.
And he's driving pretty poorly because it's not a great car.
Right.
So Ferrari really messed up.
It kind of threw a wrench in our whole whole couch fandom.
It really did. And my best friend Coral, she's a printer. She made me Carlos Sainz magnets.
Yeah.
But he's all in his Ferrari gear. So like I felt like I had to take them down because I couldn't support Ferrari.
I know, right? Yeah.
I have to support Williams because I know they're gonna figure it out. Carlos is gonna get back up there again.
You think so?
I 100 next year. Is his year.
I can't even tell you. You could not have executed what I was just trying to set you up for better, which was I was trying to demonstrate to the people that you have your own genuine interest in F1. And I was like, look at her go. She's doing it. Like, there's nobody can say that you don't. You are not actually bought in.
You are such a Scorpio manipulating me.
I'm sorry. This has been so nerve-wracking for me, like bringing you in to, because you've been on the pot before, but like they've been episodes where it's been like me,
Jay, Beth,
and yourself.
All of us.
And so it's kind of like a big group effort. And so I was like, this is weird because I'm not usually playing host to like a guest.
I feel like I'm in an interview.
Do right you?
Now. Yeah, you're a good interviewer.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Man, okay. Well, I'm literally physically sweating.
You like, are?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Aww, doing great.
Thanks, babe. I appreciate it. Yeah. No, it's been you've done great. Thanks. Oh my gosh. Round of applause. Here, let's try to do the thing. Ready?
That's perfect.
Boom, bam. Yeah, everybody loved it. No, I just want to thank you so much for taking the time out of your day. I know that obviously
you're cutting into my time to text you.
I know. Yeah, it's like now, hold on. Let's see what is the actual time of day? It's 10:37 right now. So now I would suspect that like it won't probably be until like 12:15 that like I get like a like babe,
what you doing?
How's work?
Oh man.
The other thing too is that obviously you go and pick up Addison at the end of her preschool day, which means it cuts into your very limited amount of time that you get to go and spend at Nude.
Yeah, so I'm about to go to work for 2.5 hours.
I know. Yeah, go and knock out as much as you possibly can. So maybe what we can do as like our big piece of gratitude here is just give Nude a little plug because it is a business that you and I own together.
Yes. Yeah, Nude is our second baby.
Yeah.
And she's doing great.
So good.
Couple years old now, but she's crushing it.
It's been really, really cool. Like, you know, because the other thing I talked a little bit about knowing that you were like a former, you know, pageant contestant when we first met. But then the other thing that you owned was the Newfangled Bride, mm-hmm. Which was your bridal store.
Yeah.
And
secondhand bridal store.
And the thing that I always really assumed about you is that you were going to have like these massive grand aspirations for like what like a wedding might be like and be like hyper fixated on all of the details and like these things being like massively important to you. And I think what I came to discover is that there's almost like a kind of different relationship that people who live and breathe that environment every single day end up having.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you can become a little cynical about the more grand events, maybe.
Right. Like you're almost seeing like the same sequence of emotions and stuff kind of like playing out over and over, and you end up inevitably knowing a lot of the people in town. Yes. One of the issues we had when we got engaged was that like it was hard to even know which vendors we would even like select if we
there
got
was
married.
No way I could get married in Roanoke because I'm friends with all of the wedding vendors in town.
Yes.
And I would inevitably
step on toes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was like a huge thing, like where we get engaged and we're sort of like, we're going to have to go somewhere.
Yeah. Which we did.
We ended up having a rather extravagant wedding, all things being said.
I was that bride.
It was pretty awesome.
I was like, okay, I really want the pedal cannons. This is very important.
Right.
Cannot get married without pedal cannons.
The pedal cannons were pretty awesome. That was pretty awesome. So we ended up getting, you know, married at Disney, which we have the whole video about over on Super Carlin Brothers, if you've never seen it before. But the thing I was going to say, though, is that has been so cool about Nude is that, like, as much as I knew you were extremely good at selling bridal, and you still do, like, mm-hmm. I mean, this is something that, like, you have,
still bridal.
Like, it's a very, it's kind of like a niche skill set, like, knowing how to walk the walk, talk the talk, and make people feel comfortable basically buying, and we've talked about this before, almost ceremonial garb.
Yes.
Like it's odd that that is like, that was like the product that, that you had.
Yes. It's very specific.
To think about this thing that like our, the reason that we sell these things is because our culture has created this, mm-hmm. you know, and that's fun. It's neat. But what's been really cool about Nude is that like your passion for like consignment clothing like dates back to the earliest details about you that I would say are the most genuine and true to you, which is that you always loved just patrolling like antique malls, thrift stores, consignment shops. Like,
yeah, I think my passion is for secondhand items.
Yes.
I didn't know that at the time when I was doing bridal. But my passion was not for bridal. It's not for casual clothes. My passion is for secondhand things.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Which is, it's been really cool to watch that unfold. And I think it's been really kind of remarkable and inspiring because like we live in a small town. So a lot of the shoppers that you have coming into the store are people that like at different stages of my own life, like I could have known. So like I had a girl that was a few grades older than me growing up who like would have ridden the bus to school with me. And she was like as fancy as I could imagine people being. Like she was like almost like Elle Woods from like Legally Blonde. Mm-hmm. You know who I'm talking about?
I think so. Yeah.
Okay. And like, I mean, one way or another, not the person I would have expected to walk into this environment. And she has become like one of your best customers.
Yeah.
And I feel like not just customers, consigners as well.
Consigners, yeah. Yeah. So people that like who do love shopping and do love fancy things, they can recycle all of their items, get a little bit of money out of it at the same time. It's just kind of the best of both worlds.
It really is, yeah. Like it's been amazing, I think, because I think you have such a contagious enthusiasm for what you do that the people who walk into the store end up leaving with like a newfound interest. And I think
I hope so.
Oh my gosh, are you kidding?
I hope so. Like, that would be like the ultimate.
You throw like evening events at the shop and it is remarkable to me that like I'll show up just to sort of like, you know, whether it's like to help handle Addison, to chat with the people that I know, just to, you know, show general support. And it's like I'm starting to know all the faces. Like you've got like your own community. Like I
know.
Like what we do here is this very like digital community type thing. Like all the people who like listen and tune in and like come to the shows and send us emails and talk to us and stuff. And it's been amazing. It's so cool to know you've got these people around you, but you've done that like with this store. You're like at like an epicenter of like a place where people go. You're creating a third place for people.
That's the ultimate. That's so, the dream.
Yes. So I'm just very proud of you.
Thank you.
If you guys haven't checked it out, there is a website for Nude that it's Nude Salem.
Yep.
Yep.
NEWDSalem.com.
Yep. There you go. Yeah. The other NUD. No, that one.
Not that one.
Yeah, completely different website. Yeah. I don't know what they're offering, but anyway, Allie, thank you so much for coming in. Thank you for taking the time out of your day and for being a part of the show. And then I'm going to say that's all for today. And then you're going to say the words pop, pop. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. So guys, that's all for today. Until next time.
Pop, pop. Should I do that again?
Pop, pop.
Pop, pop. Did I do it?
You did it.
Okay, bye.
Today's episode was edited by Isabel Chrisley. Vaishawn Brandon does our art. Catherine Stein is our production manager, and the show is hosted by me and Jonathan Carlin. Hey, y'all, just want to give you a quick update on our Midwest tour because it's closing in fast. We are currently sold out in Des Moines, Detroit, and Cleveland, but tickets are still available in Indianapolis, St. Louis, St. Paul, Milwaukee, and Chicago. If y'all haven't joined us for an in-person version of the show, it is so much fun and truly a night filled with magic. Tickets are available at supercarlinbrothers.com/events and can be found in all of the obvious places. We can't wait to see you in September.